Blog Talk Radio.
To the Writing Mama Show here at BTR's World of Ink Network. Be prepared to call in later and chat with our hosts, B.S. Grenier, Marcia Casper Cook, myself, J.D. Holliday, and our very special guests today, Tel Yanni, here at BTR's World of Ink Network, the Writing Mama Show. It's 6 o'clock Eastern Time on June 17, 2011. As always, the Writing Mama Show can be listened to live at blogtalkradio.com/World of Ink Network, or you can listen to it on demand at any time you like at the same address or on iTunes by researching World of Ink Network. As I mentioned, we'll be taking your calls towards the end of the show. If you'd like to call in and ask a question of our guests, the phone number is 714-242-5259, 714-242-5259, or you can join us in the chat room here at Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Hi.
Sorry, I know I mangled everything.
You did a good job.
You know
it's our turn. You did a great job.
Yeah, I think you did a great job. I'm here thinking I am so tired, so I'm probably going to sound like a blithering idiot like I normally do anyways on the show, but more so because I did not sleep well last night, and I've been up since 6.
Uh-oh.
And I was just like, ugh. So I'm dying. I've been just sitting here dying all day. Like, I want to go to sleep, but I know I couldn't because I had the show. So, anyways, welcome, everybody. It's an honor to be here today. This is your host, V.S. Grenier, award-winning editor, founder of Stories for Children Publishing, children's author, workshop speaker, and presenter. And with me today, as always, is Marcia Cook, who is an agent, an author, and screenwriter, along with the blog talk host of A Good Story is a Good Story here on World of Ink Network. And then also J.D. Holliday, who is our author, illustrator, and amazing show opener for us here on Blog Talk Radio. So,
yes, we like
to have you guys here.
We love that.
That's my short rundown there. This, of course, is the Writing Mama Show, which is here every Friday on the BTR World of Ink Network. And with us today, as Jan had said earlier, we have Tel Yanni, and we are excited to have him here because he has a new book out called Life is Not a Candy Store that is just releasing into bookstores and on Amazon. I believe it was this week. It's not in front of me, sorry, Tal. And what I love about this book, what I love about this book is it's a spiritual guide to the road of life for teens. And even if you're not a huge religious buff and you're a spiritualist in other ways, I think this is a good. Even if you're not, I think this is a good book for teens. I was reading through it and a lot of the lessons that are in here are stuff that, you know, I have been teaching my kids, especially my 15-year-old. So this is going to be a fun show, not just because we're going to be talking about his book, but because we're going to be talking about life in general anyway. So welcome to the show, Tal. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No, it's great. No, I'm just curious because the first thing I always like to know about books, which most of us who are from the writing industry always like to know, is basically what inspired you to write your book, Life is Not a Candy Store, it's the way to the candy store?
Well, it was not one event, but kind of collection of life experiences that some of them were unpleasant and some of them were so great that I just looked back and said, wow, I wish I could go back and relive my time in school where I was so frustrated or when I heard someone else and just do things differently. And I as I came across those great experiences, I walked, you know, taught my kids and then my students, just and the reaction was so great. I didn't realize that kids were so open to the subject. And you treat mm-hmm. them like adults, they respond like adults.
Yeah.
And just regular, normal conversations would just keep going and going. And one day I decided to put it as a book. And the information was there. Everything that I wanted to say was there. And I just took it in one weekend, and it became a book. I could expand on it much more. I could make it 200 pages, but I decided to keep it because of the way I felt when I wrote the book, to keep that a short book, so it would keep that moment where I decided, all right, that's the time to write. So it's pretty much to pass what I thought where I messed up as a teenager because of a dyslexia that I had as a kid that developed into really being a struggling student and all the frustration that comes with it. And I saw how people hurt each other just by not paying attention to, you know, living the, like there is no tomorrow, and just grabbing stuff and doing things just for today. And I did it when I was younger, and things were done. I felt the other side of it later in life, and I saw students, my own students doing it, and I decided that that's the message that I wanted to pass.
No, I love the fact that it is a small book because the teens, you know,
they're not going to read.
They're not really avid readers. I mean, unless you're lucky and you just happen to have one of those in your home, most of them, you know, don't like to, especially ones that are more of a nonfiction type based book.
Right.
You know, so and that's what I mean. I love it. It's short. It's to the point. And I love the fact that at the beginning of each chapter, you have little inspirational sayings from different places. I mean, you have Sigmund Freud in here. You have some that are from just, you know, anonymous authors. I'm just kind of flipping through the books. There was one that struck me earlier, and I was reading it again. It was, let's not look back in anger or forward with fear, but around in awareness. I love that because I think a lot of kids, that's kind of what they do when they're growing up. You know, they're either angry or they're afraid. Because they're trying to identify who they are as a teen, and it is such a hard time because you're in that in-between stage of you're still a kid and you still have those rules on you from your parents and you know, society in general because you're not of legal age, and at the same time you're trying to establish yourself as the fact you're becoming a young adult. And so I think that, you know, a lot of kids get frustrated and angry, and then some kids are fearful about those changes in their lives. So I love that you had that.
Right, and they don't want to say anything. They don't say anything to anybody either. And sometimes, you know, you can't help them because you don't know. They don't voice it.
And for at least from my experience, the reason is that they feel that nobody understands them. So why waste the time and tell the adults? They don't know. They're just old people. And so they feel very, very lonely. And it's actually also many adults feel the same way. And for me, it was really a changing moment in my life because I grew up in a secular society, a very small community. And so the loneliness was really loneliness. And I had to come all the way to Los Angeles and to experience something really great to become a believer in a higher power. And all of a sudden, I just changed the way I looked at life. And I was not alone anymore. Not everything that happens was on my shoulder. I was not responsible for everything, for all the mess that I saw around me, if it's in the news, if it's wherever it was. And I kind of, it made me, all right, calm down, relax. There is some kind of a plan behind that mess that you're looking at. Take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Things will be okay. Don't worry about what happened to humanity right now. Right now, change Tal. Make sure that Tal is not running from one party to another or from one relationship to another, because we run and we look for outside sources to make us happy. and that realization that there is something greater make me stop, slow down, and take a deep breath. And that's one of the messages in the book is, and 14, really 14 is, you're not alone. Calm down. Empower yourself to slow down, because the problems that they just run from one, the TV shows and the malls and the movies and the parties and the smoking and the drinking.
Yeah.
And just, so empower yourself to say, just a second, let me just stop and look around and see how I want to proceed without hurting myself, without hurting others. And that experience that I experienced when I was 23 years old really changed my life, and that's a big part of that book is you're not alone. If you will partner yourself with whatever name you call that higher power, if it's God, if it's life, it's the force of the universe, he, she, you choose. But if you will partner yourself with that energy, with that force, and you will decide to make your life worthwhile, make it holy, you can make your life holy. And that's the myth, that's the don't rush, don't worry, the candies are there, you will collect them, but don't behave as you are here only today and tomorrow everything will be gone, so you better enjoy the moment. Stop, think.
Well, this is Marcia. This is Marcia. I wanted to ask a question. You know, most people, I mean, what you're saying right now is applying to teens, but if you really think about it, it applies to almost everybody these days, because everybody's in a very, we're in a fast-paced world. Everybody's emailing. They're on the, you know, they're reading a book. They're on the iPad. They're on the computer. There's not enough time to even enjoy the moment. And so when you decided to do this, enjoy the moment, who, did somebody talk to you about this, or did you just all of a sudden, I mean, you must have had somebody that you went to talk to even understand why this was happening to you. Was there somebody in your life that changed you, turned you around, or was it just you?
Well, that was, no, it's always someone there, a teacher,
right.
You know, that, and I had a very powerful experience for a lady that I met here in Los Angeles. When I came here, I was training dogs, and she had two dogs. I started to train her dogs, and coming from, you know, from Israel after military service, not believing in anything, feeling on the top of the world, and all of a sudden, I met that lady, and she was what we will call psychic, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Had some
okay.
kind of
thing.
And she started to tell me all those things, which I, you know, I couldn't care less. But slowly, slowly it started, because she was kind of making points that I knew about me that I knew she had no way of knowing.
Right.
And it became a kind of a, hey, you know?
Yeah.
It was like a teaser. When you watch a movie, so I started to ask her more questions and at the end I just told her openly. I said, "Look, whatever you say, it's very nice, but I need to see a proof in my eyes. I don't just believe in higher powers and God and all that stuff." And she told me, "You know what? I don't know what to tell you. You don't need to see in your eyes, in your own eyes, but ask if you want a proof. Ask God for approval for 30 days, and we'll see where it takes you." And I started to do it, and I was doing it at night before. I didn't tell anyone. I didn't want my friends to think that I'm, you know, I went nuts.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And what happened, I had here a friend, and that was in 1993. Okay, so we are still good friends. And he was young, military service, all that stuff that makes him just the typical macho. And I never heard him whisper. And one day he went to a dinner and she was also there. And in one point during the dinner, she told him, "Listen, I see someone who wants to speak to you, a spirit." And he dismissed her. He told her, "Well, tell her to page me." And that was his response. And she told him, "Well, I see her, two young ladies. One, her name is Sarah. One, her name is Hannah. And to ask your mother about Sarah and
yep.
Hannah,
mm-hmm.
and no, but not your dad." And the morning later, he came to me. He couldn't speak. He was so white. He was pale.
Yep.
Because what happened to him, he went home. His father survived the Holocaust. His father survived the death march in Auschwitz.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he called home, he asked his mom, who was Sarah and Hannah? And she told him that his father had four daughters. Four sisters. And the oldest one was Sarah, the youngest one was Hannah. And when they arrived at Auschwitz, then the selection over there. And what happened was that one was chosen to go to the line to live, to work. And one, the youngest one, was survived, kind of chosen to go straight to the gas chambers. And the older one, Sarah, moved with her, took her sister hand by hand, and together they went into the gas chamber. So she gave her life, not to save her sister, but to make sure that the sister would not go by herself.
Yeah.
And he came to me whispering, told me that story. He had no idea. And 2 seconds later, I told him, all of a sudden, it sank. I told him, you know, and I told him the 30 days, and it was exactly 30 days for me starting to ask for a proof. And I was, and then I went to that lady and told her the story. She had no idea. And she was smiling. She said, well, the guys upstairs, that's how she called them.
Right. The guys upstairs.
The guys upstairs, they have their own ways to make an entrance into somebody's life. That was how she... and then she told me that what she saw back then, in that moment, is that Sarah's spirit rose from the ashes of Auschwitz, she realized that her love to her sister was bigger, greater than any darkness on the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And in that moment, she became one with God.
That's a very defining moment. You know, I don't know, you don't probably know this, I wrote a book on a Holocaust survivor, Sarah, and her sister and her had that, you know, she was much younger than her sister, and in that time, it's not easy to go find your sister in a camp. And she found her sister, and her sister saved her life. Her sister was older. Her sister was 20, and she was 10.
Mm-hmm.
And her sister and her remained their entire life together, like it was like actually mother and daughter, because, you know, there is a separate way when you're in the Holocaust and in that. So when I guess when she said that, I mean, a spirit, it's really weird that somebody, you know, could hear that and feel that without knowing the people.
Exactly, and she did not do it for one of the things that really fascinated me with her. She did not do it for a living. She refused. It gave her headaches, so she didn't. But that was my introduction to the secrets of the universe. And I said and that this event took a turn, and what I saw there was the love and the beauty and God's light, that I realized that what I know doesn't even start to describe what actually happens around us. And I devoted my life. So from this moment, that was the only thing I cared about, is really to study. And that for the last 18 years, I just explore spirituality. And on purpose, I decided not to go into any particular religion, but just to explore spirituality, because that's my goal. I have no problem with religion, people. I think that any way that would bring you closer to be yourself, to be closer to God, whatever works for you, I will support you. So I have no... But for me, it's through spirituality and through teaching. And for, you know, for the last 18 years, I'm really studying as much as I can, and pass it along to my kids through conversation. Whenever they have a problem in school, we will sit and try to deal with it. What would be the solution when somebody bullying you? How you would deal with it? Or when you're doing something wrong? How do you deal with it? Do you take responsibility? And all from that point of view of your relationship with God. How do you want to be in relationship? What kind of a son you want to be to your parents or daughter, or what kind of a mother you want to be to your kids in your relationship with God, which is, for me, it became the most important relationship, and for that I can define any other relationship I have. If it's with my wife, if it's now going through a separation, what kind of a husband I want to be, what kind of in a process of getting separate, how do I want, do I want to do it through hatred, do I want to do it through resentment, do I want to do it from a point of love and care. So
now, when you have a problem, every time you have a problem, that's what you do? You sit down and you think about how you want to behave?
Well, at the beginning, you need to think about it.
Yeah.
In one point, you don't need to think about it anymore. It comes to you automatically. It's like any other, you know, you have to practice, you train your mind to, at the beginning, to think like that. And then it becomes a second nature. If you have a problem with a stranger, see, in your relationship with God, kind of a stranger you want to be?
This is Virginia. I was going to say, in your book, you bring that up and I think it's the second chapter, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head from what I read, about how you were talking about lying was the example you were using in it, and how, you know, if you don't want to lie anymore, that, you know, don't beat yourself up about the fact you told a lie, but to recognize that you're lying, and then every time, you know, to basically become aware, and then it builds upon itself. Those small, I think it's what it's called, isn't it? I think it's actually called like first steps or small steps or something. Is what the chapter is called.
I think it's in the third chapter. But yeah, I it's kind of a dead end roads, because we all go into dead end roads, and what happened when you find yourself, you did something wrong. What happened when you're going to beat yourself down and get upset? It's what I used to do. You know, you get upset with yourself, and then after a day you are not good enough, and you're not. Or you realize, and actually that's, and I write it in the book, I have one of my older brothers, I have two older brothers. One of them, I kind of was always in spirituality way before me, and he taught me that. He was concerned about those things of lying or purpose of life as a teenager, where I couldn't even, I couldn't care less. And he told me one day, if you want to stop doing it. And he taught me what I write in the book. It came from my brother. It's the idea of be aware of what you do. And it's everything that you have in life, any behavior that you want to change, if it's drinking, smoking, whatever it is, when you do it, you just tell yourself, okay, right now I'm doing it. I know that it's not, I want to move away from it. Here, I'm doing it. And you just, it's by itself, just stop. Just by kind of pointing the flashlight into that corner of your life where it's dark, When you turn the light on, the darkness disappears. You don't need to do more than that. And it's true. Now it takes some time. It takes time. When I was a smoker, I knew 4 years before I quit smoking that I need to stop smoking. And after 4 years, it came the right moment for the right reasons, and I stopped. It's one thing, and you don't really want to struggle with that too much, with your what you consider to be a weakness or something you want to change. You want it to flow. You want to go through life relatively without struggle, and you can do that. You don't need to all day to fight yourself and to be miserable and to be upset with yourself. You go with the flow. It's like going with the river or against the river. You can walk into the water and just fight the fact that you're doing something, and every time that you do it, just get upset or realize, all right, I'm doing it. Next time I will try not to, and just happen by itself.
You know, this is Marcia. Go ahead.
Well, Oh, I'm sorry. I wanted to comment really quick on what Tal said, Marcia. I love that you just said that because my parents and my husband, because I met my husband years after I had my son, because he's actually a stepdad, and he always gives me a hard time because I lived a pretty dark life in my early 20s and through my teen years. And I used to drink, I used to smoke. And when I found out I was pregnant with my son, I literally went to the doctor, found out I was pregnant, threw my pack of cigarettes in the trash can on the way out and never looked back. And everybody's like, nah, if you smoke for that long, you can just do that. Smokers can't do that. People who drink, they just can't stop. I'm just like, well, if you really want to change your life, though, and you're serious about it, you can do that. I mean, I know like drug addiction is a little bit different because obviously, you know, it changes your brain chemically. But,
right.
I mean, I know that a lot of people, I think, you know, they're from what you're saying, at least, you know, how I feel that when I look at it, and it's kind of nice hearing someone else kind of talk about that is if you really want to change, you'll make the change. And the people who talk about change and, like, start to make some steps but then relapse, I don't think totally have the heart into the change.
Well, you have to really, I would assume you have to really be into it. Yeah, you have to really want to make those changes.
Yeah, it's not an, you really, if it happens in the right moment, you just stop. You know, it stops by itself. Yeah. You don't really need to fight it. Now, it's not a reason, you know, I don't want anyone to hear what I'm saying and say, oh, okay, so I don't need to deal with it. You know, it will go by itself. I don't need to stop doing whatever. That's not what I'm saying. But you will feel by yourself when things are, when you do it for the right reason, and that's also very important. Why you want to change, and I also talk about it in the book, is you need to come. Many times we come to changes. We want to create a change because we are not happy with where we are. And so, you know, we start to look for something else. And that by itself should be a joy, just looking, just creating a change. You don't really need to know what's going to happen at the end of the road. But if you're aware of what you're doing, and you can bring change to your life and enjoy it. And if you do it again, what I do today is I bring God into every small aspect of my life, and it's that partnership that makes everything different.
Well, you know,
you don't need others to tell you that you are good or you are that or the other. If you develop that relationship with that force that created the universe from nothing, you are in a good place. You get the power to change, the power to empower yourself from that source, and it's an endless source of support and energy and forgiveness and compassion, and so you can do everything by yourself.
I think this is Marcia. You know, I think probably because you've gone through this, I'm sure that, you know, when certainly the teenagers, when they're listening to you, I mean, it's not like you're just going rule to rule to rule. You've been through this. So it's in your heart that you tell them what you've gone through. So I assume that would help them, you know, realize that maybe they should take a second look at themselves.
Not always.
Not always? Sorry.
No, and I'm not trying to really change. I had one mother came to me at the end of the year. It was when, in May, when we finished the school year there. And she told me she had a twin in my class, sixth graders. And she told me, and they're spacing out. They look at me like they have no idea what I'm talking about. And she came to me and said, I want you to know that they listen to every word in the ear because in the car they repeat to me everything you say.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so, in the car.
And my response to her was, I'm not trying now to convince them anything. I'm planting seeds. You know, it's really when you are ready, it will open. And if you're not ready, it doesn't matter what I'm going to tell you.
Right.
You're going to dismiss it like, it's the worst, it's such nonsense that I'm wasting your time. So I'm kind of, again, see myself as someone who's trying to bring that energy to people's attention. And if it's right for you, you grab it. If not, nothing happens. You know, you move on with your life.
Okay, I have a question in the chat room. Can I?
Go ahead,
I have Fran's in the chat room, and she's asking if Tal will tell us what he thinks is what he considers the most prevalent issue for teens today. Which ones should parents address the most? Which are the issues most prevalent for teens today, do you think?
I think that the biggest problem kids have today, teenagers, is the outside influence. And it's all it takes is to look at the billboards. And I see it in L.A., I don't know, I assume everywhere else. You see all those good-looking 20-something or even 15-something smiling at you all the time. And they are all just perfect bodies, perfect faces, and they are everywhere. And if you are not that type, you don't feel good about yourself. And then when you don't feel good about yourself, you start to look for outside, I don't know, for things that will make you happy, that will make you feel good.
Yeah.
And that's the cigarettes, the drugs, the drinking, and the sex. So if parents can tell kids that it's very normal to be a 16 years old and with moods, or 16 years old and a little bit overweight, or whatever it is, it's very normal to feel what they feel. But then, what is the path you want to take? You ask the teenager, what is the path you want to take? What will work for you? Because that's the chapter in Life is Not a Candy Store, where the dead end roads come, because they will go with the alcohol. But in one point, you come to a dead end, and there is nothing there anymore. All the promises of being happy are not there, because you're just chasing your own tail, and all of a sudden you are not that good student that you used to be. You don't have a good relationship with your parents, you shut everybody down. So what is it that the path, choose yourself the path that you want to walk that will make you happy. And then the parents, and one of the things that I intended in this book is actually for parents and teenagers to read together. And develop conversations from subjects that they, ideas that they read in the book, and say, you know what, I want to talk to my kid about that. That's my
good idea.
First goal. And I had one teacher who asked me, a coworker that asked me to read the book before it was published, and a few weeks later, kind of by the way, told me, you know that your book, among other things, saved my marriage.
Yeah.
And I was kind of, you know, it was the first time. So I asked her why. And she said, I had so much anger and so much frustration toward my husband that after reading the book, I just found ways to let go of that anger and frustration and try to rebuild.
Wow.
And it was great. It's a great feeling. You know, I told her, I'm sure I will get many emails like that.
And you have a blog, Road Signs.
Yes, but I told her, you know, but you're always going to be my first. That's what I told her. So it's really for parents and kids. If I can make, you know, if everybody can read it and then talk, just find one subject. It's in small pieces of, you know, ideas there. Some of the pages are one paragraph long, that's all. Because that was enough to read that paragraph and then just think about it. Stop.
Yeah,
don't go to the next page.
Yeah, I will say that when I was reading the book, this is Virginia, when I was reading the book, and I got to the end of it, I mean, your title is perfect. I mean, just because your title, I mean, honestly, is an analogy within the book as well. You know, life is not a candy store. It's the way of the candy store. And I loved when you got to that, to the analogy of the title and how, you know, and like you said, you know, you had a friend who read the book that, you know, was an adult and helped save her marriage and stuff, because when I was there, I started really thinking about it, saying it was so true when you said that, you know, we get down here, you know, if you believe that, you know, that you were in a life before this one, and everything's laid out in front of us. I mean, we have our free agency. We can, you know, we have all this stuff up on the shelves, like in a county, so that we can pick and choose from. And the key is actually is to make sure that what we're choosing is stuff, like you said, that doesn't take us to those dead ends, because, you know, the ultimate goal is to get to the next stage in our life, be it, you know, here or if you believe in a hereafter, where, you know, the real candy store, as you called it, is in our life. And it's true. I mean, I think, you know, anybody can draw from. Right now I'm working on a book that I'm editing for a lady, and her whole book is, it's written for adults, but it's about the awakening of the spirit for her. And it's, you know, it's very similar in context to your book, except that's on an adult level versus, you know, where yours is, you know, down to where a teenager can understand it in a more basic form. And I'm just starting to see more books like that, and I'm just kind of wondering, do you think that people are starting to open their eyes? Because it seems like people have had their eyes closed to what's been going around, going on here in the world, and I'm speaking globally in general. I'm not going after any specific issues that are current events right now, but it seems like because so many different things in current events have happened lately, that people seem to be opening their eyes, becoming a little bit more self-aware of what they're doing. I mean, would you agree with that, Tal?
Yes. And first of all, it's something that was predicted thousands of years ago. From the Bible to Indian religions that predicted that in the old days that knowledge was really the only few knew it, and there was much of it was not written even. It would go from generation to generation as oral, even the American Indians did that. You know, it was orally, they didn't write it down. But it was predicted towards a big change that humanity would face, that knowledge would become the kind of, for everyone. Everyone would be able to reach it, to understand it. I know that at least from Judaism, where they have their mysticism, the Kabbalah, you are not supposed to study it unless you are 40 years old, male, and married. Otherwise, the thought would be was that you can lose your mind. It's so powerful. And now, it's there for everybody to experience, everybody to read in very simple language, and you relate to it because it speaks to your soul, not to your mind so much. It speaks to your heart. And when I write, I write from my heart to yours, so it connects on that level. So people open up to that, and then they see what's going on around, and they see that the devastations, they see the greed, they see that devastations caused because of human behavior, and the devastation that caused by nature, and they ask questions, It's not enough anymore to wake up in the morning, and that's one thing that my brother told me more than 20 years ago. He told me, it's not possible that we are here only to wake up in the morning, go to work, and then sit on a cold beer in the evening. It doesn't make sense. And I looked at him like, what are you talking about? but people wake up to that, to the fact that it must be something greater than that. And what is it? And many times it comes from even people with background, they went to the church or the temple, but even that it's not enough anymore because something is missing there for them. So they are looking for other things. And I enjoy reading, that's one of the reasons I enjoy reading all those books, not all of them, but many of them, because I can read the book, and if I take one sentence from that book and remember it, that's a great experience. So I believe that people wake up, and I don't think it's too late.
Right. But also that if the, you know, like you said, you want the adults and the teens and the children, you know, that's to work as a family unit. I think it sounds like a really good idea, and I hope this would continue because that, you know, if the parents are in tune to what the kids are thinking, the kids might not feel so alone, and maybe some of the problems that the kids had might be changed if they feel some closeness to their family rather than feeling very alone in this world.
you know, I see it, and I'm also part of the problem where I see my kids, if it's TV, if it's computer, if it's the Nintendo DS, they are just busy for going from one electronic to another, and I'm coming back late from work, so I need to catch up, and I need to sit in front of the computer. So all those things that we just don't have time anymore to spend together, because it's just the pace is
fast.
It's crazy. It's more. I look at it's more an illusion, because we can find the 30 minutes in the evening to sit with the kids and find something that we have in common with them. So it can be from playing Monopoly with them, to read books that talk to both of us. And I think this book can talk to both to younger and older generations.
No, I think you're right, Tal. This is Virginia again.
Yeah.
And what you just said, you know, about, you know, finding time with family and stuff. I mean, in my family, we made a huge, you know, drastic change because I was a fashion buyer out there, you know, in your neck of the woods out in the L.A. area. And when my second daughter, our second child, which was our daughter, was coming along, it was the whole, do we really want to have a kid back in private school doing the daycare thing? And so I took the... which I never thought I would ever do in my life, because my whole goal was I was going to be a CEO of a company one day, and that's really what my goal was. I told my husband that when we got married, and I literally put my career, I didn't even put it on hold. I literally took my whole fashion career and just threw it in the trash and said, my family is more important, and we moved from California to Utah because, of, you know, cost of living was less, so my husband could support us, and I could be here home with our children, you know, and it was probably one of the best choices I make, but even now, because I started writing as a hobby, which with me nothing ever stays a hobby. It always turns into something bigger, which is exactly why I'm doing these shows and I have stories for children
exactly.
And all
I know.
My freelancer. But and so even though I'm busy and I'm home, let's say I'm home and I'm able to be with my kids more. I mean, the same thing happens. I mean, my 15-year-old, he fences. He loves to be on World of Warcraft. He's he has a huge stack of Wii games. If he's not doing that, he's on his DS. You know, or he's doing homework or whatever, and then, you know, my daughter, she's got soccer, she has swimming, and then we have the baby. And so this summer, since, you know, everybody's home, and, of course, I get the grumbles and the groans, but every so often I'll say, hey, you know, it's cool enough here now because it's, you know, sun's going down since we're out in the middle of the desert and it's hot, and it's like only 80 versus 100 outside, and we're going to go for a walk. And I get the grumbles and the groans, and I'm sort of thinking, but this is quality family time. Even though everybody doesn't really want to do it, it's good because we're getting away from the distractions.
I think kids remember that later. I think they remember it later. They may not know, but I think they remember later these times. Because, you know, I remember things about, you know, when I was a teenager that I probably, you know, because everybody wants to go out and have a good time and have fun. And then you remember the times that you are with your family and it's small moments that do stay in your mind forever, you know, and hopefully they're good moments. You know.
I see it a lot because if today you tell them to get off the computer and come, we're going, wherever it is, to eat ice cream, they will tell you no. Pizza, no.
Yeah.
Nothing. So what you need to do is really to learn to ignore that no. I say, all right, we're going. You're not asking anyone. I say, okay, everybody is going now. And then when you're outside, you are 50-50.
Everything changes. I always get the why do I have to is the response I get. And, of course, I always say, I don't have to explain it. I'm the parent to do it. It's my comeback. And once we're out while we're playing a game, because, you know, sometimes, you know, we'll sit down and play a game. We love playing Settlers of Catan as a family. It's a little bit more of a – it's kind of like Risk, but it's a little bit more advanced than that. And, you know, we love playing it because – when we're sitting there playing, and I think a lot of parents don't realize this because, you know, we do. We get so busy. We get distracted. The kids are doing their thing. You know, you're running, especially if you're a stay-at-home mom, you have kids in sports or whatever, you're running them all over things. But I think that what ends up happening, at least from what I've seen and from my religion background, you know, their big thing is family. And they came out a few years ago with a proclamation of the family because they started seeing the breakdown of the family unit and that parents weren't finding opportunities to speak to their children. And, you know, like you guys have both been saying, I mean, teenagers especially don't just come and talk to you anymore. And so when you're playing a game or you can get them out to go for a walk or you go out and get ice cream, it opens, to me at least, I see that as a gateway just like your book, Cal, as a way to open up those conversational lines that have pretty much closed in many ways.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, instead of what when they ask me why I have to, I tell them, let's go, I will tell you in the car.
Right.
And,
right.
And then, you know, it's not kind of, and then in the car you take it wherever you want. You can say, and I speak, I say what I feel. And I say, I think it's important for us to spend time as a family, and that's why we go to the park or whatever. Now, inside they know it's true, and they're already mm-hmm. sitting in the car. So after a few times, they actually would stop asking you because the fact that you're right and kind of can annoy a teenager. So they say, all right, never mind, they will come. So I try to find when I talk to them, and I, actually every subject like that, every question can, for me, it's a doorway to talk to them about anything I want that is related. I do the same thing in the classroom. When they ask a question about something and I feel that I can take it somewhere I want to take, I'm going to take the class there for 10, 15 minutes and then would come back. And it's kind of, it's beautiful because you get to create those moments. And if you become aware of them and things that you want to improve, you take there and you talk to them, and it's unbelievable how they actually understand. They get you. If you talk from your heart, mm-hmm. says as a mother, I want you to be more that and that, and I want us to be more that and that. They respond. Not always the way you want to, but even if you get, again, 50% of what you want across,
right. Yeah.
It's wonderful. It's every time I take them to the park just to play a ball and or to ride the bike, and we come back after 3 hours. I'm so happy that for 3 hours they were not in front of any electronics. You know,
right.
That by itself it's an achievement today.
I think so. It is, and that's, you know, and it seems like, you know, and I think your kids will remember it. I you know, they really will, because I think those are the small moments that we do remember, and that's why, like you said before, I mean, it's the moments. It's living in the moment, and don't worry about, like, 20 years from now what you're going to do. Live in the moment, and I think that's a really good way to think, you know, to enjoy everything around you, and I think a lot of people don't. We're all so busy a lot of times, and we all say this, you know, we don't want to, but basically, like you're saying, we have to really make the decision to say, no, I don't, I'm going to change.
Yeah, but again, and don't be too hard. I remember first time I felt that, it was, I still remember, because I was sitting in I was studying in UCLA back then, and I was eating lunch outside the cafeteria, the kind of a sunny winter day, and I told myself, enjoy that moment. Don't tell your grandkids 40 years from now that you were in UCLA and you were that and the other. Enjoy that moment now, eating lunch in UCLA, on the campus, and that you are studying, because I was such a bad student. I was the worst student in my class, and I was such a troublemaker that.
Yeah, but you know,
to find myself in UCLA later, 20, 30 years later. It was such I never saw it coming. My parents never saw it coming. So I actually took the time to enjoy the present time. Never mind the past. Never mind the future. Enjoy the present. Live the present.
When you were a child, you were not. One of the things you're saying, that you were a terrible student, but it really wasn't your fault, because they didn't test you probably, and you didn't find out you had dyslexia until you were in 10th grade.
Right, but it's also I never looked to blame anyone, so I even don't think it was their fault. Back then, early 80s, mid 80s, when I was in school, especially in Israel, on a kibbutz, nobody knew anything about it. You were a bad student, it's because you were a bad student. And it developed to that frustration, but the idea is that you really, if you can take it, and that's what I do today when I have students that are struggling students. I see that. I see in them, 5 minutes before they get frustrated, I already see it in their faces, in their movements. So I can come, stand next to them, point something to them, and move away, and let them find. I don't give them the answers. I don't give them the solutions. But instead of concentrating on finding the answers in 5 pages, I will kind of narrow it to them to 2 pages, because I know it, when you are dyslexic, you read much slower. So I would come, I will point to them, look on this section, and I move away. And they appreciate it, because most of the teachers are actually teachers that they teach because they had good experiences in school, and they want to continue that. I'm teaching because I had a bad experience. I didn't have that one good teacher that everybody had that they remembered, and that's why they won't become a teacher. I didn't have that one teacher that said, Tal, let's figure out what's wrong. Yeah. I didn't have it. So I wanted to become that teacher, and now with spirituality, which is really what I'm about, I want to combine the two, the teaching and the spirituality, and take it, help people move to the next step in their life, and that's the purpose of life. It's not a candy store.
Yeah, Tal, I like what you just said about how when you're teaching, you know, the kids and stuff, how you narrow it down, but you kind of step back so they figure it out. Because that's one thing that I do with my son, and as our next two our girls are 6 and 15 months, so they're still on the younger side. I mean, we do it a little bit, obviously, with the 6-year-old, but not as much. But we've been doing a lot more with our 15-year-old because, you know, in 3 years, he's graduating from high school, and he's going to be out there in the real world, and we're not going to be there. And I get... I'm so glad my mom doesn't listen to the show. But my mom gets on my case because she's like, you're so hard on him. And I'm sort of thinking, but, you know, she smothered. I love her dearly. She's a great woman. But she did smother me as a kid, and she was just really lucky that I was such an independent person. Because I'm sort of thinking, if I was more like my son's personality, not saying that he's, you know, hanging on to my apron strings, because he's not. He keeps telling me when he gets older he's moving away and never talking to me again. But
that's not true at all. You know that.
Which I know is not true, but... The point is he tends to rely on us more, and it's more just because it takes effort, and so it's more of a laziness type attitude of, like, trying to find the answer. So he just hopes that we'll eventually give it to him if he just complains or whines about it long enough. And so I won't give in. And so I love that you said that, because I think even for parents, they need to, at least my perspective is that they should do that with their teens, because I mean, definitely don't give them a whole rope to completely hang themselves with. But I think you kind of have to give them some of that, you know, give, so they can experience and figure it out.
A little space.
Yeah.
Right.
No, parents have to understand, and it's something that I understood, I think, late in life, but is that there is a purpose for the challenges. There is a purpose for the difficulties we face, and every time that you overcome a challenge, it helps you to become a better person. It takes you to the next step. If you don't know that you're going to be a great writer, the first time you write in first grade something on the board or something on a piece of paper and struggle with it. If you will not struggle with it in first and second grade, later in life you will not have it, because you will never find it. So every we don't need to protect our kids too much. We need to be around them to make sure that they are safe, and that I don't want my son or daughter to become so frustrated that life just too heavy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you have to let them face. And I see it with students. I see it with and I saw it one of the things, again, if I go to my first class in UCLA, The professor there, in history class, explained us how to write essays and just basic grammar rules and basic spelling rules. And then he said, I'm not talking to the ESL students, which I was. I know that you learned the rules. I'm talking to the American students, you know, those who went to regular English class, because we just keep sending the kids on higher grades without really challenging them, really demanding that they will know how to write. And, you know, and going into, with all the reputation of UCLA, and all of a sudden that's what you hear, how you need to spell, when you spell that or the that, and it's kind of, it was a shock. So it's okay to ask the kids to do what they need to do. But it's okay to show them that they, you are never too far. They are not alone, and you do it because you care. If they,
I think that that's good.
That
never
you,
too far.
You,
yeah, never too far is very good.
Yeah, you're never too far, and you care. You show them that you care. It's not that you, you just don't have the time, so solve the problems and come to me later, we'll talk. It's no, I'm sitting next to you. Show me how you go from point A to point B. And I will help you here, and I will correct it when it needs to be corrected or whatever. But it's not that I'm not helping you because I don't have the time, because I'm too tired, because that those are your homework, not mine. No, it's because they have to understand, and that's, again, going to the reason of why doing things. It's you do things for the right reasons. If you do things just because you want to do them, even if those are good things, you do it for the wrong reason, you're not going to get far. It's going to bite you at the end. It will come, and you have to know that you do things from the right reason. The right reason is, in one word, it's love. Your love for the kids. You cannot. You can be in a position when you tell your kids, "I'm not going to help you with this with the math homework today, because I love you." Or you can feel, or she can feel, that you don't help them because you just don't have the time.
Right.
And if you don't help them for the right reason, and they know that.
So you give them an
the
answer.
The dynamic,
rather than,
dynamic would change.
So if you give them an answer rather than just walking away.
Always, I always
better.
Give them an answer, and
yeah.
answer, and to the point when they say, "All right, never mind," and they walk away.
This is Marcia. I just want to ask one last question. I just want to ask you a question. Now, like you said that your teachers and you had such a hard time. Have you seen any teachers since you've become, you know, so spiritual now and so educated? Because you're very interesting. So have you seen anybody from the past that has seen what you do now? Any of your teachers?
Well, it's from my past. I have to go back when I go back to Israel, to the kibbutz, and then I sit with my with people that I grew up with, and they are they have great time. Some of them just laugh. They look at me and they can tell jokes, and some are on a similar path that I am, on a spiritual path, and they're really enjoying, and I come and we have great conversations, because they also changed. But I also learned to talk to those, you know, when I, at the beginning, I ran and told my stories to everyone. And you realize that there's some kind of look at you and say, "What do you want from me?" So you learn to first make sure people are on the same subject, and I can have friends that
right.
You know, friends that I will watch sports with them, friends that I will eat good food with them, and friends that I will talk spirituality with them. But those who are into that thing, I really enjoy sitting with them, and we can sit because we are childhood friends. I mean, kids that I grew up with. And from age zero, pretty much on the kibbutz, it's like, it's great, very deep, very, it's great fun.
Yeah.
Well,
this has been really interesting. This is very interesting. Yeah.
Well, they tell us some great fun having you with us. I mean, our hours is almost up, and I mean, a lot of great information you've shared with us. It's been a great conversation. I'd like to give everybody who's listening your website. If you want to learn more about Tal and his book, Life is Not a Candy Store, It's the Way to the Candy Store, you can find him at talyanai.com. And it's also in the description section of today's show. So you can click on that link and also go straight to Tal's website. Is there anything that you'd like to share with us before we end our show, Tal, that, you know, any tips, any enlightenment that you'd like to share with us and our listeners?
Have fun.
That's the purpose,
to enjoy it and to have fun and to overcome. If you can overcome what you face with a smile, and again, with the partnership with God, with the energy that created everything, life will take care of itself, of you. You know, you just take care of yourself, or what you need to take care of, and the rest will fall where it should.
Good advice.
So, and I really like to thank you. I really enjoyed it today.
Oh, this
and,
has been great. This has been great.
Hopefully we'll do it again.
Yeah, I'd love to have you on another show. Yeah, we will have you on another show. And, you know, the caller that called in, her name is Fran Lewis, and she's a really good book reviewer. And if I'll get your email later, and I'll send you where to send it, because I'd like her to read your book and then have you on another show, because this is really interesting, very interesting.
Yeah,
I will be able
to. Yeah, great. It was great.
Well, thank you. And yes. Okay, so I need to go over our closing stuff really quick. So next week, because I screwed up this week and had the Stories for Children show on Monday of this week, there is no Stories for Children show for the rest of June. So I will not be on for the next two Mondays, and I will not be on for the next two Wednesdays. So you'll only hear from V.S. Grenier on a week from today. On the Writing Mama show, which is going to be our last guest, and that show...
No, it's not forever. It's just the last guest till August.
That last guest for the summer.
Right.
We're taking July and part of August off. Yeah, Jim's freaking out. What? No one told me. Anyways, so we're going to have Herbert D. Trainer, and he actually happens to be a trainer. So it's not his last name. He happens to be a trainer, and it's going to be about childhood obesity and bullying is going to be that show.
Yeah.
I've been on this. Obviously, I've been on the teen topic and children topic a lot lately. So I promise when we come back in August,
you're a teenager. You're a teenager.
Yeah,
I
do. But when we come back in August, I will move on to some other subjects, everybody. So bear with me. I just feel this is an important subject because there's just so much going on right now within this particular topic. So that will be on June. I think it's the 24th. Is next Friday.
Yes.
Show, and then Marcia, you have a good
tomorrow.
Story, good story.
Tomorrow I have a show.
Tomorrow.
Yes, I have a show.
Tomorrow and Saturday, there's a special show. And then do you have any on Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday next week?
No, but I have Tess Garrison in the 2 weeks on Tuesday. Tess Garrison is on with Fran and I. So, that's on 28th. I may end up with something in between.
Just so our listeners know, we're just taking a summer hiatus so we can recharge our batteries, but we will be on and off with A Good Story is a Good Story and the Writing Mama show next week for sure, and then after that it'll be sporadically throughout the summer, so just tune in. But you can catch all our on-demand shows because they're really great, so if you missed one, come visit us and listen to one of them, and we thank you.
Thank you again, Tal. It was really good.
Thanks again, Tal.
You're very welcome. Thank you, ladies.
All right, everybody have a good weekend, and we will talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.
Yeah. See you tomorrow. Bye. Bye.
Follow me to the world of ink.